You are listening to an Elim Church Christchurch podcast. We hope that you are encouraged and inspired by the message you are about to hear. And if you're ever in Christchurch, why don't you pop in and say hello? We'd love to connect.
Well, we're in a series called Make Room. And the idea is that our houses, they're often full of stuff. Our schedules are full of activities. Our minds are often full of things going on, and it can be so hard because it's so full to make room for God in our lives. So this month, we're right at the end of it, we're talking about making room. I wonder if you've ever gotten to the end of a day and found that what you set out, that you were constantly thwarted by what you were trying to do in that day. Doorbell rings, phone rings, things, everything's going on around you. You're constantly getting interrupted from what you set out to do. You know, when our schedules are full to bursting, interruptions can be very inconvenient. You know, people work hard, don't they, to avoid interruptions. You might put your phone on silent to avoid interruptions. Doctors schedule patients at particular times to avoid interruptions. People in the office close their office door. If you're lucky enough to have an office door, you can close it so that you would block out other people who would come and bring interruptions. Even on public transport, a lot of us look at the floor. There's no reason why we couldn't be interrupted, because all you're doing is sitting there to wait. But as you're sitting there waiting, you don't want anybody to interrupt your waiting time. So you might just stare at the floor or look at your phone. We all work hard to block out interruptions. But this pattern that we might not even know that we do comes with a problem. Because often what God does in our lives, the God moments and the opportunities that he gives us, often in the heat of the moment feel like interruptions. And when we're working hard in our day just to get through the different things, we can often, without realizing it, block out the things that God is doing because they feel like interruptions, opportunities to reach out to somebody. Opportunities to connect with our spouse, opportunities to show love to our kids, all of these things, they often come up unplanned and they feel like interruptions. You know, the problem is it's possible to block out God moments because they feel like interruptions. Jesus could have rode from place to place on a horse. He could have rode on a donkey, could have rode on a horse and car. He could have traveled a lot faster than he did. But when Jesus went from place to place, he chose to walk. He chose to walk. The average walking pace is 3 miles per hour. And there's this Japanese theologian that I like, I'll share a quote with you in a moment, who wrote a book called 3 Mile an Hour God. Based on the idea that when Jesus was here with us and when he was ministering from place to place as a traveling preacher, he would walk at 3 miles per hour, not in a rush, able to be interrupted. This guy's name is Kotsuke Koyama, and he said this in his book, "Love has its speed. It's a spiritual speed. It's a different kind of speed to the technological speed which we are accustomed." It goes on in the depth of our life, whether we notice it or not, at 3 miles per hour. It is the speed that we walk, and it's also, therefore, the speed that the love of God walks. Jesus moved through life at 3 miles per hour, and as a result, he was able to be interrupted. A lot of the stories that you read of Jesus' miracles say something along the lines of, and as Jesus was walking along the road, blind Bartimaeus comes out. Someone else comes out. He meets a woman on the road. And we want to read. I want to share with you one of these moments that we read in John chapter 4, which feels, upon reading it, like an interruption. The context of this story, Jesus is traveling and he meets this woman by a well, and he's sitting by this well in order to rest, and he connects with this woman. But the context that you need to know is that is the history is that 700 years prior, the northern tribes of Israel had gone evil. They'd turned from God's ways, and this invading Assyrian army comes down and takes them over. And what the Assyrians did is they didn't believe in preserving the culture like the Babylonians did. What the Assyrians believed in is dispersing the culture all around. So all of these tribes were dispersed around the known world. And but some people stayed behind from those tribes. And what they did was they intermarried with the local pagan tribes. And these people, they called themselves Samaritans. And so the Jews of the south naturally felt way more holy than the Samaritans of the north. And so this kind of situation pops up. In fact, it wasn't uncommon for Jews in Jesus' time, 700 years on from these actions, instead of traveling the shortest route, they would travel the longer route, so they would never have to come face to face and be tarnished by having to actually see a Samaritan. Now, Jesus, he is a traveling preacher, and I wonder if he's motivated by the need to make a spiritual point, or I wonder if he's just motivated by taking the shortest route from A to B, probably both, but he decides he's going through Samaria. And this is what happens in John chapter 4, verse 4. It says, "Now he had to go through Samaria, and so he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of land that Jacob had given his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about noon. When the Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, 'Will you give me a drink?' His disciples had gone into town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, 'You are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans.' Jesus answered, 'If you knew the gift of God and who it is that is asking you for a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water.'" What I want to draw out of this passage is such a rich passage, but what I want to draw out is that what we see, or what Jesus may have felt as an interruption, is actually an opportunity. And what unfolds is actually a beautiful picture into seeing what God's heart is for people. This moment shows us a few things about how we, like Jesus, can handle the interruptions in our lives, how we can make room for some of the things that perhaps God is doing. First thought that comes out of the passage is to stop waiting for ideal conditions. Stop waiting for ideal conditions. Jesus could have chosen not to spend time with this woman on any number of really good reasons. It could be that he's tired from his journey. And we know that rest comes from the Lord. And so he could say, "Well, actually, I've got this opportunity to rest." And other times he withdrew from the crowds in order to be able to rest. He might say, "Well, I'm tired from my journey. I might need to rest." Or he might say, "It's actually improper for any man, let alone somebody's others regard as a prophet of God." We know more, but others regard him as a prophet of God. And so he knows that maybe I shouldn't be speaking one-on-one to a married woman. Or maybe simply on the basis of the racism in his culture, which avoided Samaritans altogether. You know, the conditions were so far from ideal. They were not ideal conditions. Jesus didn't wait for the conditions to become ideal or perfect. What he saw, or what he might have experienced as an interruption, he said, "I'm going to take this as an opportunity to share the love of God with somebody." You know, the problem can be so often we judge the potential success of something by its initial conditions. We think, well, the conditions aren't quite right, so therefore it's not going to end in success. Well, for Jesus, the conditions were far from ideal, but he said, "I'm going to take this as an opportunity from God anyway." We might say to ourselves, in terms of non-ideal conditions, we might say, "Well, I'm too old for youth ministry." Whenever I hang out with the youth, I think that, by the way. Yeah, we all think we're young until you hang out with some actual young people, and you think, "No, I'm not young anymore. These guys are amazing. I just can't do that anymore." You might say, I'm too young to speak. You might think to yourself, somebody else is better suited for that role. You might think to yourself, hey, when my situation in life changes, when this job promotion that I've been going for changes, maybe at that point I'll be able to step up and do what the Lord is calling to me. All of these are different ways of saying, I am waiting for more ideal conditions. And Jesus says, come on. You can't be waiting for something in the future to happen. The harvest is right now. The opportunity is right now. What you see as an interruption is actually an opportunity. And Jesus speaks to this problem. In verse 35, he says, this verse pops up. Now, Jews actually had this saying that you would use in regular language that says, it's 4 months to the harvest. It's 4 months to the harvest. Well, you know, maybe like a little bit like YOLO, you know, like, it's 11 p.m., should we order pizza? It's 4 months to the harvest, you know, let's chill out. Let's order that pizza. And so Jesus says, don't you have a saying, it's 4 months to the harvest? I tell you, open your eyes and look at the fields. They are ripe for the harvest. Jesus is saying, don't sit back. Don't sit back and say, we've got stacks of time. Harvest is coming later on. We got lots of time. Jesus says, the harvest is here. The interruptions that you see are opportunities, and they are right here. You know, I'm a Pentecostal pastor. If you didn't know, Elam is a Pentecostal church, which means we believe in the outpouring and the spiritual gifts that the Holy Spirit brings. And so I, as a Pentecostal pastor, I love the concept of revival. I pray for revival. I believe for revival. But I just want to just kind of counter that with this idea that if we're always thinking that the harvest that God is going to bring is down the track when God brings about this state of revival, then what we do is we don't come into alignment with Jesus' teaching right here in this passage. We say, oh, when revival comes, everything's going to be different. Jesus says the harvest is now. The harvest is now. A historical story about that, the first Baptist pastor to come over to New Zealand took his position having ministered in Edinburgh with the Scottish revival. He saw amazing growth. I forget the exact stats, but just hundreds and hundreds of percent growth. Lots and lots of people coming to the Lord in the revival times at the turn of the century. He came to New Zealand and he prayed daily that God would do the same thing here in New Zealand. He never saw it to the same levels, but at the end of his life he said, I may not have seen revival like that before, but what I saw was continual revival. What I saw was one or two people every single week that the Holy Spirit was drawing into church. What I saw was one or two people, for reasons that they don't even know, coming under the power of God in my services every single week. What I saw was continual revival. That's what Jesus is speaking here. He says, the harvest is now. We will believe for it in bigger measure and bigger measure, and we will keep praying for it, but we can't take our eyes off the present. A second thing that this passage speaks to is that one person is significant. One person is significant. I'll make a confession to you. On Instagram, I only have 355 followers. I know. Some of you might be disappointed that your pastor is not an Instagram influencer. Maybe I just don't eat the right foods. Maybe I don't take enough photos when I'm in cafes. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I need to do something different. But I'm not an influencer. Hey, 356, actually. That's right. I wrote this in somebody. I got followed by someone this week. Come on. Thank you very much. You see, the young people, it matters to them. But 356. How about that? You know, there's a trend in our culture, that's why we number followers, there's a trend in our culture to estimate the significance of somebody by the numbers of people that are following that person or that thing or that church or that politician or that ministry or whatever. The root of this is really problematic, because the root of it says that you wouldn't spend time to impact one person, but you would spend time to impact 2,000 people. That's just not the Jesus way. Jesus is comfortable ministering to the thousands, but he's also comfortable ministering to the one. And there might be somebody here who says, well, yeah, I'll minister to one as long as they're powerful enough, as long as they're significant or influential enough. This lady is not influential at all. She's had five husbands, and the person she's with is not her husband. In anyone's society, particularly Middle Eastern society, that writes her off from absolutely zero influence points. You wouldn't even look her in the eye. Jesus does not gauge opportunities based on numbers of people. For Jesus, one person is significant. He told a parable about it in Luke 15 where he says, suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And the answer is no, in your mind. We all know the story, so we're familiar with it. But every shepherd says, no, you would not do that. Why would you leave 99 sheep in open country to withdraw the only thing that is protecting them? They don't have any fences. To go after one lost sheep that's probably a little bit sick in the head and is going to get lost again. You say, no, no. I had 30 lambs this year. I had 30 lambs. One out of 30. We'll take that. Jesus says, no. The shepherd of God goes after it, and when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Jesus is saying, don't look down on the one. Don't look down on the one. Question, I guess, is that if you would break your schedule to connect with 10 people and impact them for the gospel, why wouldn't you break your schedule just to connect with one? One preacher put it this way, Jesus leaving the 99 to go after the one seems irrational and senseless until that one is you. You know, when it comes to our interruptions, one person is significant. You might like your neighbor, you might not like your neighbor, but they are significant in the eyes of God. You know, that person who's sitting next to you on the bus, they're significant. That children in your street that you feel are probably a bit too naughty, they're significant in the eyes of God. You know, Jesus stopped his schedule. He put aside his tiredness so that he could be with just one person, someone his disciples would have struggled to look in the eyes. A final thought for you today is this, is that one moment can leave a legacy. One moment can leave a legacy, because Jesus has this beautiful conversation with the Samaritan woman, and it ends in this way. In verse 39, she goes back to her town, starts telling everybody about her experience with Jesus, and it says this in verse 39, many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me everything I ever did. So, when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with them, and he stayed 2 days. And because of his words, many more people became believers. They said to the woman, we no longer believe just because of what you said. Now we have heard for ourselves. We know that this man really is the savior of the world. It was just one moment of tiredness. It was just one moment of a travel delay. It was just one moment of awkwardness between genders who were not supposed to talk with each other. It was just one moment where he broke down the impact of racism in the society. It was just one moment. But in that moment, a whole community experienced God in their midst. One moment can leave a legacy. It was in its essence an interruption. But Jesus, in his approach and his care for this woman, he turned it into an opportunity. Another image that comes to mind is the idea that at the start of summer or at the end of winter, you might go out and plant some seeds in your garden. And as you put each seed one by one into the ground, you don't know whether it's going to fruit or not. But you plant them anyway. You don't know where they're going to grow up. If you're planting a tree, you don't know if it's going to get past the sapling stage and into fruiting. And even if it fruits, you don't know if it's going to become a mighty tree in the garden and produce harvest after harvest after harvest, year after year. But you continue to sow seeds knowing that every seed you plant has a chance that it will grow into a tree that bears a mighty harvest. One moment of planting seeds can leave a mighty legacy. So it is with our lives as we go from person to person, planting seeds day after day. We don't know how many of them will fruit into being a mighty harvest in the name of God, but we continue to plant faithfully day after day after day. One moment can leave a mighty legacy. As we draw our message to a close, and I'll just invite the keys to come, let me ask you, what might change in your week if you lifted your eyes to see the harvest? If you stopped saying, well, we've got lots of time, I just need to get through winter, I just need to fix my income challenges, I just need to get our expenses under control, like I just need to fix my schedule so I might have time to minister in this way. If we stopped saying there are 4 months to the harvest and instead lifted our eyes and said, my God, I see the whiteness of the field. It's all ready to come in. Jesus, would you give me opportunity after opportunity to reach out? And I'm going to do that, and I'm going to pray that prayer, and I'm going to do that safe in the knowledge that whatever God you bring into my life, I'm just going to move, plant some seeds. What would happen if we thought of the harvest as here instead of still to come? Maybe instead of your regular pleasantries, you might ask your neighbor, well, how are things going? How are things really going? Can I help with anything? Instead of being on public transport and just listening to music, you might start up a conversation. Find that the person who's been sitting next to you on your bus this whole time is actually a pretty lonely guy. And they don't really know what to do. Maybe by taking a step of faith to share with your coworkers what God is doing in your life, you might actually come face to face with the truth that they are way more open than you ever thought. Maybe you might find, I know that you will find, moments for God to move in a way that truly makes a difference in somebody's life into the community. Come on, church. In our week this week, let's make some room.
Thank you for listening to this Elam Church Christchurch podcast. For more information about our church, you can visit www.elamchristchurch.org or connect at one of our services every Sunday at 10 a.m.